Hour number two, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Friday, continuing things, and we move right along to our favorite. Sometimes we call him Uncle Chris. Sometimes we call him forever Titans wide receiver, but we always call him our friend. Hello, Chris. What's up?
Man, what is going on? How y'all brothers doing? I missed y'all last week, man. I cried for like 2 seconds and just missed you guys.
Well, we missed you too. You know, I don't remember where I was. Joe was on vacation.
What?
We've had, you know, it's that time of year, but we're back now. And we're ready
to talk
some football.
Man, I'm ready to go. Can you lead and get ready to start camp, man? Unbelievable, man.
I'm excited. I'm excited about it. I am curious, you know, and we've talked a little bit about this, but as we get closer, Adam Vingan and I were talking about this yesterday. You look at this receiver group for the Titans, and I definitely think on paper it's improved, but
yes. You
know, you've been in those rooms. You want to get your catches and you want to get your yards. How do you look at that and talk about that as a group in spreading the ball around?
I mean, everybody has to know their role. And I know you hate when I do this, but I'm just going to go back just for a little bit. 1999.
We had go ahead.
Great receivers. God. I'm sorry. We.
I actually don't mind it. It's fine.
I mean, we had some number one guys in that league. We had Yancey Digpen, Derek Mason, Kevin Dyson, Joey Kidd, all those guys that can
Isaac
play
Bird.
Number one. Isaac Bird. But the thing that we had in that locker room is everybody knew their role. Our identity was running the ball with 27, and we'll catch a pass once in a while. But then now in 2026, you have a whole bunch of receivers. You got Carnell Tate. You got Ridley. You got Robinson. They got for the New York Jets. You got Oliver that we're not talking about. We got Estrepo. All those guys in a pot. But everybody has understand their role. So when they get into a game situation, it's 3rd and 5, and you got Cam Ward that looks at Tate as opposed to Cam Ridley. Is Cam Ridley going to get upset, or is he going to say, okay, my role is when my opportunity comes, I got to make the play. So that's what's going to determine if this passing corps is going to be successful or not.
If I told you in his rookie year, Carnell Tate would be targeted 116 times.
Ooh.
He'd make 62 grabs, 885 yards, 8 touchdowns. Would you take that?
I think that's a win. I definitely think that's a win because when you come in there as a rookie, you know, you come and you make a splash like that, I think it's awesome. And I think, in my opinion, I think he might catch maybe between 70 and 75. And the reason why I say that is because you got Dable that's doing the RPO, the run-pass option. So it might not be a lot down the field, like a post, a go route, or a seam. It might be like the little slants, the little choice routes, and get the ball in his hands and let him make plays. I think that's why he'll catch between 62 and 70 balls this year.
Talking to our good boy Chris Sanders on the Chase. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I miss my music, man.
You'll get it. But I'm not a fan of you going on across the street in the morning with our friend Burton over there.
Man, he asked me to do a crazy interview. We just get on that. Don't talk about that. We just talk about goofy stuff. But this is my first love right here. You already know.
Oh, okay. Promo time.
We appreciate that.
I love that. All right, so let me ask you
that to John, please.
Right. So the Titans lineup versus the Jets, September the 13th, and you got Calvin Ridley up top, you got Carnell Tate at the bottom, and you got Wandale Robinson at that slot. All right, who's going to cover the slot guy who's that good as Wandale Robinson if you're the defense? Because you got two pretty good DBs.
Right.
You put the strong safety on him. You got the strong safety out, put another DB in. I mean, I think this is a great twist that Brian Daboll's got with Wandale Robinson, because this guy, I'm telling you, and I think, and you know this guy could be the MVP of the team.
I think he can, because if you look at last year when he was with the Giants, I'm talking about Robinson, I mean, he had, 1,000-something-yard catch. He had a lot of, attempts. But here's the thing that he does so special is he keeps the chain moving. And when you have a situation to where you have a receiver that can run the choice routes, they can run those little seams, they can run those little quick routes where he can get open and run after the catch, he's going to make Cam Ward better. And then when he starts doing that and start destroying a safety or they put a linebacker, whoever they put on him, then now you got Carnell Tate, you got Robinson on the outside, they can beat the one-on-one coverage. But at the end of the day, you can have all those great wide receivers. You can have all those great routes, but your quarterback has to deliver. That's the deciding factor of what we're talking about and everything we're doing.
If Cam is running for his life back there, you know, the X and Ys are zipping down the field. What's Wandale's? What's his job to get open if Cam's scrambling?
he's got to understand where the quarterback's eyes are. It's kind of like if I just imagine if I roll out left, but I run a route that's on the right. So what I need to do as a rule, we have rules as receivers. If I'm the number two in the slot and the quarterback rolls out left, I got to get in his vision. I got to run like a shallow cross or a deep over to get in his vision. If you look at last year, I think it was Restrepo. No, it was Restrepo or somebody. No, it wasn't Restrepo. I forgot the other wide receiver to where he rolled out the opposite way. Then all of a sudden he threw a long pass to him and he caught the football. And that's what you want to do as a wide receiver. It's rules that you have to do. Get in his vision, even if he's rolling out the opposite way.
Is that now because, I mean, Wanda Robinson's 5'8", 180. It's not like he's 6'3", 220. So is the slot, when you got guys that come out like, all right, we know you can't, you know, you're not the fastest guy, you're not the biggest guy, but you're perfect for the slot.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. You got to have good feet in the slot. And one guy that was really good in the slot was Derek Mason. Derek Mason, as a receiver in the slot, had the suddenness. What the heck does that mean? That means I get in and out of our cut. And I'm going to give you a perfect example. If I'm the number two receiver, I'm in the slot, and a linebacker shading inside, I understand as a choice route, I got to make them think I'm going inside and quickly get out and go, you know, run a little quick out route. Those are the things that are going to get your quarterback better, and that's what's going to make you a great wide receiver. And the good thing about it is even when you have that situation, that scenario, the quarterback and the receiver have to be on the same page.
All right, this is actually a very serious question that I want to ask you here. All right, so Jerry Rice at a combine runs a 4.65. Tim Brown runs a 4.6. John Ross runs a 4.2, right? why was Jerry Rice and Tim Brown, why were they one of the best receivers of all time when their speed, you know, we all get fascinated by the 4.3 and 4.4 when they didn't have that. Why are they been some of the best receivers of all time?
See, I'm going to give you a perfect example. Even though they ran 4.6 and 4.7 or 4.5, whatever it is they played that speed. I'm going to give you a perfect example. I don't know if you remember a receiver that came in with the Titans called Calico. Big. Nobody even knows that he ran 4.3, 4.2 at the combine. But why didn't he last? It's because he didn't play like he was 4.3. So when he, say if he runs a comeback or a curl or a dig, it took him 5 days to get out of his cut. So that's how he was consistently getting covered. So now you have a situation with Jerry Rice, a Derek Mason, a Jamar Chase, guys that are not blazing fast, but they get out of their cuts with the same speed that they run with. So that makes the difference why they're creating separation.
I was watching a Derek Mason reel came through one day on Instagram. All his play, and he was always open. And he's not like he's 6'5", 230. I mean, he was always open, and Steve was always looking for him. I'm like, he wasn't a first rounder. None of the stuff that you attribute to the greatest receivers of all time.
Right.
But he was just damn good.
Yeah, but let me give you another guy, Steve Largent. Steve Largent had the worst face mask in America.
Yep.
He had looked terrible in his jersey. He wasn't fast. But why was this guy consistently getting open? Because here's the deal. You got to have the art of running routes. What does that mean? That means I got to get the DB's hips locked opposite of where I'm going. And another thing that I have to do is we have to have the ceilings, but also lie with our eyes. I'm going to give you a perfect example. Just say if I'm running a dig route, I'm running a 15 to 16 yard dig.
Okay.
And the defensive back is head up. I got to make sure. Number two, I got to lie. What does that mean? That means I'm going opposite of where I'm going. So when I'm having the DB going opposite of where I'm going, his hips get locked the other way. I'm going the other way, and all of a sudden I just created the separation. I don't need to run a 4.3 or 4.2 to do that. I need to have the art of running routes, getting the DBs locked and going opposite.
Okay. By the way, you and Steve Largent have a connection. Do you know what it is?
Steve, Craig.
Do you know what it is? You were both drafted by the Houston Oilers.
Wow, is that crazy?
Steve Largent was drafted by the Oilers. Nobody thought he could play in the game, and they shipped him off to Seattle.
Yeah, but you know what's so crazy? You know what bothers me a little bit is we'll see a kid or we'll see a player that runs 4.3, 4.2 and automatically classify him as a great receiver. That's not fair.
Right.
It's about the art of route running. It's three phases of the route. It's the release, the acceleration, and what you do at the top of the route. There's a lot of guys who can't do that. That's why Jerry Rice was good. Tim Brown, you know, all the guys that were fast. Webster Slaughter that I had a chance to learn from of running routes. It's more of understanding how to set the guy up and the art of route running.
Chris Sanders is with us. You know, one thing we saw in the quarterback documentary is, you know, Cam is he's vocal. He's a very vocal type quarterback. You played with a guy that pretty much talked to you with his eyes. You know, that like you knew you kind of knew what Steve wanted, with a look. So how can Cam evolve into a leader at the quarterback position, even knowing that he does like to chirp a little bit?
Yeah, but I see that the thing about it is you want to be demanding. You want to keep guys accountable, but also you want to be approachable. You know what I'm saying? Because there's a lot of quarterbacks that are demanding and mean, but they're not approachable. You can't talk to them. I'll give you a perfect example. Aaron Rodgers. You can't talk to Aaron Rodgers because he wants to do it his way. But even though Cam is being more talking a little more, he's talking in a way to where he's demanding. Hey, if you're running a dig, I need your eyes right here. If you're running a post, I'm throwing it at this position. He's demanding these guys and keeping them accountable. So when he's speaking loudly and, you know, telling guys to be where they be, he's still approachable. And when you have guys that love being around your quarterback, that love to talk to your quarterback, that love to spend time with your quarterback, you're going to do what he says. Why? Because he's building a relationship and he's approachable.
How would Steve communicate with you? Like, if he wanted you to do something different?
He would walk out the field. He wouldn't even say what he's looking at me like. Like, as I'm walking out the field, he's staring at me the whole time like, Chris, what are we doing? So I knew that I got to come back and say, okay, Mac, what were you thinking on the play? If this was the coverage that kind of rotated on did some things that I wasn't expecting, now we adjust and now we build up, and then he comes back and we get it done.
Tim Hasselbeck had a great point the other day. I asked him about why the rookies are in 5 days ahead of the vets. He said, so when the vets get here, the rookies don't slow them down. I thought, he's right, right?
What if you have a rookie that's going to take your position? You see, I mean, that's a little different. I don't think that the rookies come in and slow it down, because there's not that many practices to where they can do so much. Because if you look at the NFL right now, there's a limited amount of practice. I think they should all come in at once, because they all have to gel together. It's not about the rookies and the vets are against each other. It's about gelling together, building identity, and doing this together. So it's not about, okay, oh, these guys in a way, they're going to make mistakes. That's your teammate. So if he messes up, the whole team messes up. So let's build together and build an identity.
You know, did you get hazed when you were a fun hazing when you were with the Oilers as a rookie?
No, they just cut my hair off. Like, I mean, they cut my hair off and cut one of my eyebrows off. And then here's the craziest thing, that where I was really, really mad. This is when cell phones basically came out. So what they did is they grabbed all my clothes and put it in the water and froze my my clothes in the freezer. That's the only thing that they did.
That's actually pretty funny.
So my cell phone was frozen, and I'm like, man, I was teed off on that one.
I will tell you something funny. In 2000,
did Bruce lead the way on that?
No, it was D. Russ. His name was Derek Russell. He just fussed at everything. He did that.
Well,
it was him.
Well, if John Runyon came to me and said, go do this, I'd be like, yes, sir. I'll get right over there.
Hey, that's one guy you don't want to mess with. But Bruce Matthews is more funny. He'll be like, okay, you get your helmet, I put Pepto-Bismol on your helmet, and it's dripping down your face. That's the kind of stuff that Bruce Matthews
And then you'd be looking at Bruce like, how'd you get all the hair on your back?
Oh, but I'll tell you, that dude is the – I never knew anybody had trap hair. I mean, it's shoulder hair. I'm like, what are we doing? Save that vest off, man.
Oh, you know what's funny? I'll tell you a moment when the NFL, I saw the changing of the guard when they did the rookie hazing, and they tried to haze Lindell White in 2006, and he said, you come near me, I'm going to hurt you. We were there. We witnessed this. The media witnesses. Lindell's like, I ain't playing this game. I ain't doing this. You come near me, I'm going to hurt you.
I remember one day, I can't remember the little trainer that we had, but he was the guy who was with Steve Watterson. He was kind of the guy that helped Steve Watterson. I can't remember his name. But they hazed him one time, and they kind of did some things to him. Before practice was over, everybody's tires was on the flat. That's why you got to understand who you mess with and who you don't mess with.
What? Was his name Sammy?
Sammy, yep.
I know him.
Sammy.
Or knew him.
Sammy.
Yep.
So, be careful.
What do you mean knew him? Is he know
he was at, no, he was at FRA for a little bit after he left the Titans. Yep.
But he always had the same look. He that dude's like 65 years old, man.
When I was in high school and he was at FRA, I'm like, this guy could kick. I mean, he was a little guy, but like I thought he could kick everybody's butt.
But he has so much experience, man. He was good at what he does. But you got to be careful who you mess with. Uh-huh. Everybody's tires was on the flat. I'm like,
that's awesome.
No, I'm good.
Oh yeah, good. Right now I know that's no longer like high school. That's no longer allowed. Which I'm fine with that, because listen, you're trying to win games, not pepper spray some teammate.
I'm
right.
What? No, I think it's in the compounds of this. This is the key. When you say when people say hazing, we got to be careful. When you're hazing people, you're trying to go out. You're trying to hurt somebody deliberately. When we have hazing, it's kind of like, oh, we put funny haircuts in their hair, and they have to be okay with it. Like, okay, this is the tradition that we have. Oh, you got to cut your hair and you keep a little straight. Whatever, that's great. But when you take it as a point of I'm deliberately trying to hurt you, that's when it's wrong.
Let me ask you another. We're going to keep you on to about 5 o'clock today.
Please do. Come on.
By the way, what's the NBA practice schedule? You guys done for today?
Yeah, we're done, but then we actually start camp on Sunday. So we got 4 days of camp in Suwannee. So, I'm ready to get out. I'm excited. I got my beer going ready. I'm ready to eat a whole bunch of food at Suwannee. So I'm excited, man. It just feels different. I know we practice in the summer and we lift weights, but actually get into football shape and get ready for Pearl Cone, it's just a different feel, man.
Let me add, did you guys – were the jugs machines around when you were a rookie?
Yes. What? Oh, I loved it. I did it like 2 times a day. Absolutely. What?
But let me ask you this. Nobody throws that way. No quarterback throws like the jug. What's the benefit of the jug? I know you're catching the ball. I get all that. But isn't it better if I'm throwing to you and I'm like throw to your feet, I throw over your head, I throw to the
left.
Isn't that better than the jugs and just firing the ball right at you?
Yeah, it is, and you're right. But you can do it at different angles. But here's what I love about the jug machine is it's not just catching a football. It's watching. It's telling the guy who's catching the football to follow the football with your eyes. You're training your eyes to follow the football because I tell all my receivers, you don't catch the ball with your hands. You catch it with your eyes. So now if we're doing the jug machine, I'm saying even if they look away and catch it, nope, that's not what I want. Have your eyes follow the ball. So now we get into the game, and it's 3rd and 5, and the ball's behind you. You're going to follow the ball with your eyes because you've been trained to do that, and that's why I love the jug machine.
Okay, 2 questions on that.
Sure.
Did you wear gloves when you used the jugs machine? And 2, did it help callus your hands to be ready for a guy that threw hard like Steve McNair?
Yeah, the only thing, the reason, because I started doing it without gloves until it slipped through my hands in the point of hitting me square in the snoot. I was done. So not in the nose, but the snoot. So I'm like, okay, I'm putting helmet on, and I'm using gloves because you got to remember, it's not just callus in your hands. Your hands are going to be wet from practice, and it's going to be moist. So you want to use gloves. But at the end of the day, man, you got to use that jug machine to make sure your eyes follow the ball because you're going to train yourself to do it in the game.
Oh, it's interesting. I was just curious because I see that it's the same pass, the same velocity, all that. And there was a drill the Titans did at camp a few weeks ago. I think Paul Kaharski had video about it.
Yeah.
The ball thung on the ground, and you had to scoop it up. And, like, a lot of the receivers couldn't get that.
Yeah, but see, that's where you can use the jug machine because the jug machine is adjustable. So you can move it to different angles and different things like you did. That's who introduced me to the jug was Les Steckel because I never knew what the jug machine was. So once I got to camp, he was doing it at different angles and, you know, behind me, sideways, all those things at a different philosophy, even closer to where I had to, you know, stick my hands out and catch it. So those are the benefits of catching the jug machine.
So if there's a high school coach listening right now or a high school player receiver, what's the best drill for a wide receiver? The absolute best drill to become the best wide receiver you can?
It's just catching the football, running in motion. Not just running in motion, but just running in place and using your eyes to catch the football. And I think that there's so many sexy drills that are out there. You're like, oh, that's sweet. But you have to do something that's going to pertain to your craft. So one of the things that I do is the toe tip drill to where they got to run and they got to catch the football, but then they got to be cognitive of tapping their feet in to, you know, keeping in bounds. So now I'll give you a perfect example. A couple of years ago, one of my receivers was doing the drills over and over, and he kept asking me, Coach, why are we doing these drills over and over? I said, watch, you're going to subconsciously do it when you're in the game. So now we get into the game. It's 3rd and 26. He runs a long, deep route, and he catches it, and all of a sudden you see him tiptoe, and he comes to me to the sidelines. He said, Coach, thank you for telling me to do that every day because now it came into fruition.
As a coach, are you more excited when a guy catches that deep ball for a touchdown than you were when you scored a touchdown in the NFL?
1,000%.
I love it.
I'm gonna tell you why. And the reason why is because – you watch kids develop. You watch them go through the hard times. You watch them drop balls. You watch them, you know, run a great route. But then all of a sudden they get against Pearl Cone and they run a post and they catch a touchdown. And to see the excitement on their face, to see their mom and their dad cheering in the stands, to see their teammates come to congratulate them, It is so, it feels so good to make others great. And that's why I love to see those kids catch touchdowns.
Hey, I got good news for you. That the game against Pearl Cone, I'm going to be there.
Let's go.
I'm going to be there.
Don't big boy me, though. Because when I come up to you, I'm going to be like, hey, how you doing?
I'm going to say hi to you. Don't
worry. Is that opening game? Four weeks of the night season starts.
But 4 weeks.
I think I can say this. I'm going to say it anyway. That's going to be our game of the week. So,
let's go.
So we'll be broadcasting that.
What week is this of the season?
This is week one.
Week one?
August 21st.
Yep. Oh!
It's going to be a heck of a game.
Pearl Cone and NBA.
I thought it was the
17th. I have the 21st.
It's the 21st.
The 17th is a Monday, Chris.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Monday Night Football.
But listen.
Yes, sir.
The 17th of August is a special night for this show that you're a part of, and we'll tell you when that day comes. No, we got to tell. We can't tell you now, but we'll tell you that day.
Okay. Well, I'm so excited. I love being
a part of this
2.5 family because we family.
We are family.
Absolutely.
Yep. All right. Chris, appreciate the time as always. Have a good weekend.
Always, brothers. You too, guys. Love you.
Bye-bye. See ya. Love you. Bye.